Welcome, the latest episode.
Again, a latest
episode of Right Wings. I'm not even going to attempt to, you know, count or remember.
The fifth. Pretty sure this is the fifth.
Okay. We are coming to you just before NaNoWriMo, just before all hell breaks loose for us writers. At least this writer right here.
Or at least those writers who are doing NaNoWriMo. I'm just gonna kind of take it easy, getting back into the saddle, as it were.
Yes, because you've been writing.
I have indeed. Shock horror, and let's just give our listeners a couple of minutes to recover from the utmost shock that they've probably just had.
We can now play some elevator music.
Go and have a quick shot of brandy or whatever you need to have a drink of.
Yeah. We both been writing, actually, so make it a double.
Just generally a bit of a shock all round, I think.
So is your writing going?
It went well. Two nights ago, I just basically... One of the main problems for me is the distraction of video games. I am a big mad gamer, and I absolutely love playing all sorts of different things. And I've just been distracted by so many things right now. So it just got to a point where I was like, look, for God's sake, I really need to do some writing. So I actually just unplugged my PlayStation, and I gave the cables to my missus, and I said, right, just hide those from me. Okay, because no matter what happens, I have to write.
That's drastic.
Yeah, well, it was needed, to be honest. And since doing that, over the last 3 days, I've written over 3,000 words. So I think it's done the job.
Nice.
Had to spend 45 minutes actually trying to find the most recent version of this current work in progress, because there was some paragraphs I knew had written, but either I accidentally deleted the copy that had those paragraphs in, or I wrote them and then deleted them because I didn't like them. In any case, I rewrote them, they're better, and then because they were better, I was able to carry on at long last, and I've made progress. This is for my my high fantasy work in progress. Still has no title, but it's a story that I've got so many ideas for, and they all kind of line up pretty neatly. So it's good to be getting back on with that one.
Yeah, when you have something that lines up and kind of comes to you as a neatly packaged thing, as opposed to a jumble of ideas, you just have to write, because it doesn't happen.
Yeah, absolutely.
As it happens, the thing I'm writing is also kind of similar.
I was just about to ask, how's your writing been going? What is it you've been writing?
When I say I'm writing, it's more of outlining my NaNo project, which I don't normally do for a story. I kind of tend to pants it. For me as well, this idea comes, if not fully armored, leaping from my head. It was pretty neatly structured already, so I knew I had to act on it, and kind of figured that NaNo was as good an opportunity as any to execute on it. So I did an outline, then I started panicking, because it's alternate history or historical fiction, depending on how you look at it, spanning 4,000 years. And it's basically just setting up the environment or the world for my sci-fi stuff. But it's been great fun. I have the outline. It just needs to be written.
The hard bit is actually putting it down.
Yeah. No, but it's what I discovered with outlining, and this was kind of new for me, because anytime, and maybe this is why I don't do outlines that much, is when I start outlining, I try to, instead of kind of finding the beats and finding the edges of the story, I kind of want to write the thing without writing the thing, if that makes any sense.
I find that you barely ever make sense, but you know, whatever, we'll go with that for now.
Thank you. This outline is just structure and just plot. There's nothing in there that's it's a bunch of ideas very neatly organized. It's chronological, but I won't be writing it chronologically. But with each, you know, with each section, I know what's happening and where I need to be, and nothing else. So it's equal part outlining and equal part discussion writing. So it's going to be fun.
Well, as long as you're actually going to have fun writing it, then that's the main thing. And I certainly look forward to seeing the finished product.
Well, I was hoping that you would see an unfinished product first and help me edit it and act as a beta reader. But
yeah,
only if you offer it. So it's, you know, you don't have to.
Well, yeah, we can, you know, beta read each other's work in progress, and I think that's a fair deal.
Indeed. So this week we have an esteemed guest, Apex Sizemore from Apex Sizemore? Jason Sizemore from Apex Magazine, and Apex Sizemore from Jason Magazine. we are on top of. I am on top of this thing, like nothing in the history.
You need to go to sleep.
Yeah, that too. But I also want to finish my work before Nano, so I'm kind of more free to write, as opposed to being distracted by adult things like making money.
Well, you say that Nano, you want to be more free to write, but we all know that it'll actually be more free to stare into the void and have minor mental breakdowns, because that's all Nano ever is for writers.
Yeah, but I have a schedule for that. You know, I go into a mental breakdown at 10:30 every morning, and that lasts for half an hour, and then back to the grind.
I have a mental breakdown from pretty much the time I wake up to the time I go.
I hear you. So without further ado, here's our interview with Jason. We are here with Jason Sizemore of the Apex Magazine fame. And we thank you, Jason, for joining us for an interview.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
Thank you very much. It's greatly appreciated.
So before we jump in, and I do have quite a few questions to you, in case anyone amongst our listeners who don't know who you are, why don't you introduce yourself?
Yes, hello. I am Jason Sizemore, as you mentioned, of Apex Magazine fame. I'm the editor-in-chief of Apex Magazine. I am also the editor-in-chief and managing editor of Apex Books, which is like the brother company of Apex Magazine. Both divisions have kind of the same, let's just say, goals of publishing very edgy and dark sci-fi with a social and technology-based outlook.
And Apex has the most amazing, I know that Stephen King said on Twitter that we shouldn't use the word amazing, but the most amazing covers I've ever seen.
Oh yeah, thank you. In terms of Apex, you're more than welcome to use the word amazing over and over. I won't complain. Because I'm going to drop an amazing. Part of the cover can be laid at the feet of Leslie Connor. She's kind of my art director. She decides on each month's cover. So all those beautiful covers that we have, she finds them.
I know that the old saying goes like, don't judge a book by its cover, but as we will probably discuss in publishing, you do judge a book by its cover very much.
Yeah, it's both a fortunate and unfortunate reality.
Yeah, but on the other hand, it... and it also ties into kind of the care or like the more care that small publishers put in into their operations, that they find not just new authors and new stories, but also new artists, and give them exposure, so to speak. I know that you are kind of not a fan of the word exposure or the concept of exposure. So as a segue to that, I want to quote something from your book, which is titled For Exposure.
Okay.
which kind of grabbed me, and I think it's a great starting point for this interview. And it's, I didn't want to be old, reliable, and boring. I wanted to be someone who might make a difference in the world. And I really enjoyed the book, and I will put a link to it in the show notes. I really love this sentiment because, and I think Apex is doing just make a difference in the world, or at least in the words of all those people who get their start. And why don't you kind of walk us through the idea behind why did you get into publishing and kind of this kind of ethos that you give a voice to people who otherwise would have trouble breaking into the industry.
Yeah, certainly. You know, I never really grew up as a social warrior, so to speak, and I don't consider myself one now, but I do believe in a certain degree of activism, and I think with Apex, it kind of fulfills some of that activism need that I found myself having 12, 13 years ago. And especially nowadays, there's a lot going on in the world. So doing the magazine and doing the books now, to me, has never been more important. Now, you know, to make a difference in the world, That's not just on the social aspect. I also wanted to, you know, as an artist, as a writer, editor, publisher, I wanted to produce works that people would remember or appreciate or be entertained by. It's the same motive that any other artist would have. And when I came up with the business plan for Apex, you know, not only was it, you know, to make a little bit of money so it can be self-sustaining, it was also to be an entity that was looked at like any other successful entertainment venture. And looking at it that way, I think that's helped us stand out. I was speaking with a writers group that I lead here in Lexington last night, and they were talking about how, yeah, a lot of our stories does have like a certain point of view, but it also, it's very, very entertaining, and we avoid being preachy, and we avoid knocking you over the head with beliefs and political stuff. Yeah, sure, we do want to express a narrative that's open-minded and fair and inclusive, but our main thrust is to always be interesting and to be entertaining.
That's a good outlet to have, I think.
Yeah. I won't name names, but I mean, there are certain publications and publishers out there who are just seeking to make statements, and they don't concern themselves with the quality of the work in terms of it being fun, you know, fun to read or whatever. So,
it's all well and good making statements in writing and things like that, but the book still has to be readable in order for the reader to actually get the messages you're trying to get across.
And it's important to that Apex is a pro-rate magazine, so if any writer who submits and is accepted, that's credit towards CIFRA membership and all that good stuff, which is another aspect of the book that I really enjoyed, is that even when things didn't go that well on the business front, that you held on to having the responsibility to all these people who put their trust and their creative energy and time into submitting and into going through the process.
Yeah, you have to respect and pay writers and be professional. And in return, I expect writers to be professional towards us. It all begins with writers, really. I mean, they're the one producing the content. I see myself as someone who might shape the content into a cleaner form, and I will package it for the customer, which, you know, the readers. But when it comes down to it, without writers, without skilled writers, you have nothing. And I would like to say, too, that, yeah, we are a CEFWA and HWA certified pro market, but that doesn't mean that if you are a new writer, you don't have a chance. I would say every third or fourth person we publish is a first professional sale for that person. And that's always a great thrill to me and my fellow editors, being able to say, oh yeah, I was this person's first pro sale. Because oftentimes that person will go on to be successfully published continuously and find themselves having a successful career down the road.
Yeah, but they always consider that first, that very first chapter for, as it were, PayPal transfer or something that that they got for their writing. I know, like I.
It's
would...
like when a kid does well. When you see someone you've published do well, it's like, oh yeah, I'm very happy for them. Can you hear me?
Yes. Yes, we can.
Yeah, yep, can now.
The reconnect idea was good. That seemed to fix it.
Well, you know, when in doubt, have you tried turning it off and then back on again?
Absolutely. I used to do software development, and people would always ask me, oh, man, my computer's not working. And sure enough, that was my advice every time, and more often than not, it would work.
But technical issues are kind of a brand thing for us, so it may be our bad mojo.
You're just trying to spin it any way you can, aren't you, Greg?
Yeah. Well, that's what I do. I'm a marketing guy. what I was going to ask is. Without, you know, I don't want to paint a false perception of big publishing versus small publishing, because I think there are great people working in this industry who like what they do and they are worth submitting to. But if you could just talk about how is small publishing different, and more specifically, you know, how is Apex different from the others, and why would you encourage people to submit to you? And basically that's it. I just almost babbled on.
Okay, well, you know, there's self-publishing, small publishing, and what I would call New York publishing, which is the Big Five. And I think depending on who you are, one channel is better than the other, and I don't really think one is better or worse than the other. And they all three can produce, you know, money if you know what you're doing. Now, when would you want to go with a small press like Apex? Okay, so self-publishing is a venture that if you're a people person and you like to travel and like to connect and love doing interviews and you're charming, that might be the way to go for you in terms of, you know, making money. If you want to be completely hands-off and have an agent or have a huge marketing department possibly backing you, you know, go to New York. Now, if you want to be involved, but you know, it's kind of like the three bears, you know, one's too hot, one's too cold, one's just right. If you're in the middle in both of those, then small press is the way to go. It's a lot more intimate than going with the New York house. You get more control over the book, and you get plenty of opportunities to take part in the marketing if you want to. I think all good small presses have their own marketing push and don't require authors to do a great deal of marketing, but that's something, if you do go into small press, that you would expect to do. Why would you go into Apex? Because, well, unlike some other small and micro presses, you know, we pay advances, we do try to market our books, we are out there pounding the pavements, and by that I mean going to conventions and what have you, to promote the business and our books. And also, I think we just have some pretty darn good editors in Leslie Connor and Jane Clark and Hannah Krieger, who will help select fantastic artwork and help make your book really awesome.
Yeah. Back in the day when I first started this podcast in its first iteration, my first interview, courtesy of Apex, was Jerry Gordon, and his one advice that he would give to writers is to network, and like you said, you go to conventions, and there are a lot of people, due to the nature of small publishing, there are a lot of people coming in and going out and making it. So there's a great deal of networking to be done, which I think
is absolutely great. And you know, you don't have to like travel and attend events. It's good if you can, because you know that's probably the most effective way to network face to face. But I mean, yeah, be involved in the online community. Interact with your favorite editors and publishers and writers on Twitter and Facebook. And after you do that for a while, you'll get a good overall picture of what they're like, their beliefs, the kind of stuff they like to publish, and if they fit into what you want as an editor or publisher. Also, you know, you'll make friends with other writers, and if there's one thing writers are all very good at, it's gossiping. And you'll hear, oh, so-and-so is not paying, so maybe you'll want to stay away from them, or you know, so-and-so has a really mean editor. I've never heard that one about myself. But you know, maybe you don't want to work with a mean editor, so you avoid that publishing house.
And another thing that I think, or I would assume that small publishers are more exposed to, is it's kind of a teaching experience, because like self-published authors don't really know or experience how the publishing process works on an industry level. And with the Big Five, you kind of go in knowing what you're doing, or have people around you like an agent or a manager or what have you, who knows what they're doing. So do you think that small publishers are also a teaching experience, and you have that? Do you view this as an added responsibility on your part to kind of explain and kind of walk new authors through the paces and show them that this is how it works, this is the process, the contract, and the publishing window, and the editing, and all that stuff?
Certainly. Especially with first-time authors, there is a lot of hand-holding, you know, a lot of explanations. There have been instances where I have had to explain every clause in the contract to the writer. Not because that they were suspicious, it's because, you know, they're not familiar with the legal terminology with contracts. It can be very confusing. It confuses me still. And this is why agents are such a good thing. Yeah. Especially if you're dealing with a big publisher. One caveat, though, is small press, it'd be really hard to find a good one. there are so many crooked small press out there that it kind of has at times given the small and indie press side of things a bad reputation. This is where networking again is key. So before you sign with a small press or an agent, certainly do your homework.
Yeah, definitely. Google, at least Google them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, at the very least. Yeah, at the very least, make sure they're not in jail or something.
Yeah. Martin, do you have any questions on this? Before I segue into the Apex Book of Word science fiction.
In all fairness, I actually don't on this occasion. I'll be completely honest. I've not known about Apex for particularly long. I don't really know huge amounts of Outlook, but.
If nothing else, additional person has learned about Apex then.
Yeah, exactly. And the dozens of listeners, or dozen of listeners of this podcast. tell us a little bit about the newest issue of the Apex Book of Verdessa. Because
that just came out a couple of weeks ago. It was edited by Lave Tidhar and Christina Gerardo, who is the guest editor. Lave is the series editor. He did the first three on his own, and then he was like, if you don't know Lave, you know, he's like, this is too much work, I'm lazy. So he's like, can I get a, you know.
So he's a typical writer then.
True. Yeah. Oh man. Yeah. He's such a stereotype. Labby, you're probably not listening, but you know, I still love you, man. For volume four, he had Mavesh Murado. And then in volume five, Chris Dorado. They selected 23 stories all over the world. Some translated for the first time into English. Some reprinted for the first time in English. The series has done incredibly well for us. It's been we were talking earlier about making a difference. I think it's one of those anthology series that has made some difference in that it has helped broaden readers' perspective on things such as own voices and sci-fi and translation. You know, it's not the only part of the whole movement, but it has certainly played some role in it, and I'm very proud of that, and Lavi is as well.
Yeah, because that's kind of the there are two main reasons I brought this up. One, obviously, is that it's new and people should buy it. We will put all the appropriate links in the show notes. And the other is that I do feel that fiction and particularly genre fiction is becoming or starting to become kind of one-sided, and it desperately needs diversity and different perspectives. As a very good example from recent memory that really made an impression was obviously Black Panther, with the Afro-futuristic sensibilities, and that was such a novel thing for the mainstream entertainment that it did really well. And from that perspective, it's really important. And the other thing is that a lot of people outside of the major Western markets, like the UK and the US, have a harder time getting into the industry and then getting their voices heard. So I think it is absolutely vital for making a difference with these people. And that's great. What are your thoughts? Like, you know the market better than I do. Do you think it's an issue that we should address through anthologies like this, or do you think it's much more balanced than it looks from my side of the things?
I think it's I think it's becoming more the norm because of, to me, diverse fiction is interesting fiction, and I think it's not just for me, but I think people are finding out, hey, that's true for us as well. You know, I've read all the white guy sci-fi. Nothing wrong with it. It's great stuff. I've been reading it my whole life. But, you know, it's good to shake things up. And that's where being, including diverse fiction, not only, you know, makes everyone equal on a playing field when it comes to writing and on a social level, but it also strengthens the overall literary environment and certainly makes it a lot more interesting for readers. So I don't understand why some readers push back against that. Well, I kind of do. A lot of it has to do with bigoted and racist views. But there are some people who aren't that way, who still push back, and that they're just uncomfortable with trying new things. To me, the newness of a writer's voice like Todd A. Thompson, whose Rosewater we published, totally blew me away. As opposed to, you know, if I found yet another white writer writing cyberpunk, which I have published a couple of books like that. Like I said, I enjoy it. But there's just something fresh and wonderful getting sci-fi from other cultures.
Yeah. And, it's very encouraging that you said that the series has been great for you, both because, you know, it's a success for the publisher, and also because that means that people are responding to it in a positive way.
Absolutely. You know, the current Afrofuturism movement, I think, is a good example. Like you said, you know, you mentioned Black Panther. We have the Nalo Hopkinson's books, and my reprints editor Maurice Broaddus writes really good Afrofuturism, and his career has been on the up and up. So you know, it's a style that readers are finding that they love and are kind of clamoring for, and it's wonderful to see. It's like, it's about time.
Yeah. And it can be a gateway to other not so much mainstream.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So to kind of wrap up the interview, I wanted to ask if you have any advice or things to note, or we like to imagine or things that our audience is mostly writers who are working on their first pieces and look for advice and try to get into the business. And I think writing short fiction and going through small press is still not only a valuable way, but a very, very valuable way to get started. So if you could share some thoughts on that, what to do, what not to do, along the lines of that.
What to do and what not to do. Well, there's whole books written on both of those subjects.
Absolutely. I'm going by the for exposure book, Go to the Apex with Barclays. That seems to be a good way to
yeah.
make an action.
Go to the Apex parties.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's some experiences in for exposure that people like to tease me about, but you know, the reason I shared them is to show that everyone's path to success is riddled with potholes and unfortunate events. So, and I think for exposure certainly gets that point across. Now, for advice for an author working on their first piece that they're hoping to be published, I really think, unless that you are naturally gifted, that you need to have formal guidance from someone, and you know, an editor or a friend who teaches English or something, who can explain to you, you know, in terms of plot, theme, setting, character, all the core elements of a novel, what is not working and what is working and the why of it. Often you'll get feedback from friends who are beta readers saying, oh, I really didn't like this part, you know, blah, 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 blah. They're not able to say why, perhaps, or say, if you did that instead of this, it'll fix things. So if you can find like a mentor, and this is where, you know, joining writers groups or CEFWA or HWA can be helpful. Go to like a local literary center and find these more experienced writers and editors, and I think improve your odds of being published manyfold.
And more specifically, now that NaNoWriMo is upon us, do you have anything to say to aspiring writers, other than, you know, don't submit your manuscript on December 1st to the first editor that you Google that.
Yeah, you always got to add that caveat. Don't submit your NaNo manuscript. I'm a fan of NaNoWriMo. I think it's a really good way of getting your butt in the seat, and if you win NaNoWriMo, it's really good training on meeting a word count every day and making sure that you write on a regular schedule. That can be very difficult for people who are trying to transition into a writing career. Because, you know, after a week or two, the newness the cool feeling of it starts to wear off and it starts to feel like a grind. So, you know, overcoming that is a good, probably the most beneficial part of Nano. You know, the stuff you write, if it's your first or second Nano, it's probably not going to be very good. So take it as a learning experience as to what it is like being a professional writer. I mean, you always be writing, right? That you're every day your butt has to be in the seat and you have to be cranking the words out.
Great. Thank you so much for coming on the show and to our listeners, and subscribe to Apex because it's awesome. And another added benefit is that at least in my experience, when I started getting seriously into short fiction, and I wanted to write short fiction, coming from a background where I was mostly reading novels, I just sat down and read Apex cover to cover, the next issue, and got into the rhythm of shorter stories and different structures. So that's definitely a
benefit. It's a great suggestion. As you know, it can be Apex or Clark's World or, you know, FNSF. What you'll get is, you know, not only will you read interesting stories, but over and over again, you'll start seeing, okay, this is how you construct a really good story.
Particularly, like, at the very beginning, that you like to publish pieces that have a personal connection, a personal perspective, and I think that translates also into very innovative and creative storytelling methods. Like, I was blown away by many stories that weren't traditionally structured or weren't straight up beginning story, but it was a great story. It was created beautifully and told beautifully, and it inspired me to look at how I tell stories and what is possible to do with not necessarily 50,000 words, but 6,000, 2,000, 4,000.
Yeah, someone asked me if I considered the magazine avant-garde, because every once in a while we do publish stuff has a non-traditional structure or plot, and I'm just like, no. If you've seen the show Black Mirror, that right there that's about as apex as you can get.
And Black Mirror, so amazing.
Yeah.
And the other thing I would encourage everybody to do is buy the word SF book, either the new one or the previous ones, all of them really, because we need to get exposed to fiction and to ideas that aren't part of our own perspective, aren't part of our own culture, and it's important that we experience these.
Yeah, I agree. And Lavi has a really good track record of finding writers who have went on to bigger and, you know, better things, so to speak. He certainly has an eye for worldwide SF and who's good. So if you kind of want to be ahead of the curve, grab the new volume. I don't know if you've seen a couple years ago we did a revamping of the covers, so now they all have this really cool retro look, and and they look really nice lined up on a bookshelf.
Oh yeah, I saw your post. I love that idea, and I also because it's my pet peeve when publishers publish a series and then in the middle of it they switch formats, and then it just, you know, it just looks funky on the bookshelf.
Yeah.
So it's great that the set is looks great. Thank you, Jason, so much for your time. Dear listeners, every link and reference and all that good stuff will be in the show notes and will be on our Twitter timeline. You can find Jason on Twitter as well, at ApexJason and Apex Mag and Apex Book Company, I think is the handle on
Twitter. That's right.
Go follow them, check out their website and read their stuff because it's amazing.
Definitely. Thank you very much for coming on.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me. It's been a blast.
Really appreciate it.
This is probably the most reserved we've ever been.
Oh, yeah. Really? You should have gotten crazy for me. Come on.
whose child is that in the background? Oh, that was Martin.
Yeah, that'll be mine.
can we make them co-host instead of you? I don't know. Just playing it.
I think I should make a co-host instead of you.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, she talks just as much, but yeah, she's a lot more interesting to listen to.
Yeah, touche.
What are you talking about?
Oh. So I guess this is where we wrap things up with a nice little bow.
Yeah. Well, you wrap things up.
And everybody gets to listen to my. You know, everyone gets to listen to my calming English voice.
Easy.
So yes, once again, thank you everybody for listening to us. We absolutely do love any feedback that you care to offer us. You can get in touch with us through Twitter. All of our usual Twitter links are going to be in the show notes. You can leave us voice messages on Anchor. We would absolutely love to hear from you there as well. Or you can even email us, thanks to the wonders of email, at writerings.podcast@gmail.com. Have I left anything out?
Rate us on iTunes, on Stitcher, and
yes,
wherever you listen to, because that helps us a great deal. And it more importantly, it helps others to discover us. Share our episodes with your friends, or if you didn't like the episode, share it with your enemies. We take either. Spread the word, and definitely talk to us, and let us know what you think. Next week we will return with another very lovely English voice, besides Martin's. And I will let the two of them talk and be English. And we will talk to you next week.
So if next week's conversation ends up descending into the weather and tea, you know why.
Yeah, I promise I won't drink my tea with lemon juice. Or I try.
Fucking Philistine.
Yeah. Well, you know, we can't all be sophisticated Brits. That's
yeah. More's the pity.
Yeah. Well, I'm from the Eastern Bloc. Anyway,
we all have our crosses to bear.
Yeah, and our origin stories to kind of forget. Thank you. And we will speak to you next week.
Absolutely. Thank you, everybody, again, and we'll speak to you next week. Good night.
Cheers.
The podcast you just heard was published with Anchor. Got something you want to say to the creator of this show? Send them a voice message using the Anchor app, free for iOS and Android.